The reason these detainees are in detention centres is because they escaped, that they are seeking refuge from Afghanistan and other countries, and they're just following their human rights, which was to seek asylum. They came to Australia. The Australian government decided to, rather than grant them asylum, they decided to imprison them as criminals. And so these detention centres are actually holding people against their legal rights. That's my understanding of it.
And how did these individuals travel from Afghanistan to Australia?
By boat. Some went overland to cross to Indonesia, and from Indonesia they caught a boat to Australia as well. But the point is that they were seeking refuge, and they were dispossessed in their own country of origin. And my feelings are that once they arrived to Australia, which is the land of the free and the land of the fair go, they were also dispossessed of their humanity by the way they've been treated in these concentration camps.
Well, Stephen, I wonder if you can think back with our listeners to the Serbian conflict and when many, many refugees were coming out of Kosovo, and how there was much media attention on them and their safety and their well-being. And I remember the media in Canada and the United States was really focused on the safe harbor that these refugees were receiving within North America.
Same thing in Australia. We actually had a safe haven in Singleton, near where I live in Australia. And it's beautiful. It's actually called a safe haven. The big difference now, that safe haven has become a detention centre. And the difference is just when you go into the place now, there's actually big fences with razor wire and barbed wire. It's completely changed the feeling, whereas a few years back when the Kosovars came here, it was actually a safe haven. And why? Why the sudden change? I believe that the government is actually trying to tap into xenophobia, rattle the Australian people by using September 11th catastrophe that happened in America to strike fear in the hearts of the people here. And I believe also that if they weren't Muslims, they weren't from the Middle East, in other words, if they weren't the other, it wouldn't happen. For example, look at Zimbabwe. I'm pretty certain if there's a whole bunch of white people on boats coming out to Australia as refugees, the government will allow them to come in. I feel, this ain't my own personal opinion, I feel that there is a racist undertone to the way our government is treating these people.
So just to clarify something that you said, the refugees who came fleeing Kosovo were staying in the same complex that the current detainees from Afghanistan are staying in now. But the facility itself has somewhat changed in, say, the decor.
No, sorry, I may have confused you there. I was referring to another detention center, which is close to where I live. Where we are now is about 1,750 kilometres away from where I live, in the desert, in the South Australian desert. Where I live, there's a detention centre there called Singleton Detention Centre, and it was built by ACN, which is under Wackenhut, the private cryptic services organisation. And when the Kosovars were here, that place was actually a safe haven, which meant that they had education, you know, in English. They have all sorts of activities and facilities. Visitors, they go out into the community, they get some money and help, and they go out and spend the money out in the shops there. They actually have soccer games with the local community people, all these things. But Singleton Detention Centre, Safe Haven, has now changed to Singleton Detention Centre. And the only reason I referred to that was to show you the change in attitude or change in policy towards refugees. Where we are now in Woomera, it's very, very far away from Singleton. It's one of the most isolated spots in Australia. It's in the desert, and it's also a former atomic test site, Maralinga. And the whole area, so if you look at an atlas of Australia, you'll see that it's called a prohibited area because of the military connections to it. So if any, as one of my colleagues said earlier, it's like Alcatraz in the desert. If they escape, try to escape or whatever, people be able to find them.
Stephen, is there anyone there that can comment on the way that the mainstream media has treated the refugees fleeing from Afghanistan, and particularly the case of those being detained in Australia?
Yes, we've got Dave Mackay here, who's actually a journalist, so he's definitely a good person to ask that question to. So I'll pass you over to David.
Thanks.
And thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Hello.
Hi, David. You're a journalist for what organization?
No, I'm a former journalist. I used to be a newsreader and an editor of a paper in a town called Broken Hill here in Australia.
Why? I wonder if you could compare the treatment of these detainees in the mainstream press in Australia to that of the world press. I should contextualize it and let you know that here in Canada, the only time we heard about the plight of the detainees there in Australia was during a period of hunger strike in which the detainees were actually sewing their mouths shut. So I wonder if you can situate that for us, that bit of information for our listeners, remind them of that incident, but also just offer a general appraisal of the media and the treatment of the detainees there.
Yeah, well, obviously the media here in Australia is a lot more aware of what's happening, and there has been difficulty even at this stage to get coverage in North America. The story about them going on hunger strikes and sewing the lips shut was actually, I think, what has kind of brought it more to the attention of the public, in that they were trying to say symbolically that they have no voice. And in sewing their lips together, they were trying to show how desperate they are to be heard. Putting them in these really isolated places means that they've had virtually no contact with Australians, apart from the wardens who are watching them, and who apparently have been quite unfair in their treatment of a lot of them. So, I don't know, did you get the report over there that was saying that parents were sewing their kids' lips together?
Yes.
That's a total lie. There's been absolutely no evidence of that at all. That was one of the total lies put out by the government in an attempt to make them sound, demonize them, basically.
Idiot monsters.
Yeah. That once that was disclosed, then they just changed the subject, you know. There were a couple of teenagers who put one stitch through the upper lip and one stitch through the lower lip, and we don't know how deep that was. I mean, I remember as a kid putting a needle and thread through a layer of skin and putting my fingers together just for a bit of fun. Certainly we have young people these days who put holes through ears and noses and navels and other parts of their body. So it was not extreme, really, as far as self-mutilation was concerned on the part of these two teenagers, but it was an attempt to get the attention of the people and to let them see just how terribly desperate they are. Some of them have been in there for a number of years. These are young people, many of them without even parents, just being held there as children in these detention centers. And then quite a number of babies actually born there. They've never seen anything outside of that detention center.
How large of a facility are we talking about here?
Well, that's another interesting thing, that there were 3,000 or 4,000 people here just a matter of weeks ago here at Woomera, and there's a rumor at the moment that there's only 300 people there now. I'm not sure where they've been shifted to. It's very hard to get any kind of information because the government is just so totally secretive about it. In theory, these people can have visitors, but to our knowledge, there haven't been visitors because we just were up at the gate this morning. And you go through a circle of, you know, where's your pass? We don't have a pass. How do we get a pass? We don't know. And so you're gone. You know, you just don't get in. And there's always some excuse. We're not accepting visitors today because there are too many of them. And so apparently they only accept visitors when there are no visitors. And not many people can get this far out. It's hundreds of miles away from anything.
Stephen earlier, who was just speaking prior to you getting on the phone, had mentioned that the mainstream media is doing an effective job of using xenophobia to scare the Australian people into believing that these are appropriate conditions for the detainees.
Well, as a journalist, maybe I'm a little bit biased, but I don't think that that's been the case totally across the board. Certainly there have been some terrible abuses of the media, and that they have definitely created racist undertones, and quite happy to do that. I think of a few papers in particular, but it's also been the media that's helped. I think that the coverage of the lip sewing thing, for example, because of its sensational aspect, the media then began to at least make the Australian public aware that there were people in these detention centers. I mean, the general public here in Australia was just totally unaware for a long time. So the media has served a purpose in that way. And even today, with these detainees who have escaped, we've been busy practically through the night trying to arrange interviews so that some of them can at least get their story heard before they're, you know, they're almost certain to be recaptured. But at least so the Australian public and the world can put a real face to these detainees instead of this monster face that they're all, you know, terrorists. We've got children that are seeking shelter, asylum with us because they could not find asylum with the Australian government.
Well, before you pass the phone, I want to ask you, is it possible to interview someone that escaped today?
I think it's pretty difficult, really, because, you know, even amongst ourselves here in the camp, most of us don't know even where they are. And the media has sometimes had us. We had the ABC, for example, last night was out here for about 5 hours waiting for them to line up an interview, and then it didn't come off. So it's not that easy. Yeah.
Okay. Could you pass me along to someone who could talk about today's action, the mobilization leading up to it, and then describing what happened, I guess it was yesterday morning?
Okay. Well, we've got Norman Talbot here,
okay.
Who's a retired university professor, and he can maybe give you a little bit of the background.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Fine.
Thanks. Hello, Norman Talbot here.
Hi, Norman. I wonder if you can tell me about the mobilization leading up to the action at the fence.
The center was in contact with us. There were people with phones inside among the detainees, and they wanted to stage a sound demonstration to go up on the roofs and wave to us and shout to us so that we could hear them. They wanted some kind of human contact. And we decided to go across and call back, and we took the trailer with loudspeakers on and things like this. You know, it was an intention simply to make human contact. We had no idea. I believe no one in the 1,600 or so people who went there expected to simply push down a fence and walk in and go through all that riveted, barren, hideous area and make contact with the human beings in there. It was an amazement. It was as if we were sort of led there. It was not a plan. In fact, we had a plan like it for today, but it happened yesterday. And the inmates were desperately glad to see us and to feel that there were people who cared. And there was a very extraordinary passivity on the part of the police. They were generally simply standing there in full riot gear and watching. And some of the detainees broke out, and then we hurried them as best we could back to the camp here. And the police, of course, moved in and arrested a few of the ones who'd got away because they're now escapees, and they forfeited all their supposed civil rights. And there have been more arrested since. And we now have roadblocks and the only way out of Woomera. And we know that there are still some visitors, our guests from the asylum seekers who are hidden in tents here, and we don't want them to be taken back. But the trouble is, the alternative seems to be a life of flight. It's a very hard position to be in.
Well, I wonder
if that makes sense to you.
It definitely makes sense, but I wonder if you could also talk about the position that you yourself are in. You're a retired university professor. You went
out
with 1,600 people on Friday morning to make human contact with these detainees. What brought you to that point of wanting to engage with these detainees in such a way and then actually to aid them?
Well, that's my misfortune. I'm a Christian. I'm a Quaker. And I believe that their souls are as real as mine. And I believe that they are imprisoned for no crime at all, for an indefinite period. No charge has ever been made against them and ever will be. They have done nothing which is wrong. They've simply fled from tyranny, which people are allowed to do. And they are not being treated like human beings. They're not being respected. I know the police have souls too, but believe me, they're being used for an immoral purpose. I am convinced that this is an unrighteous thing, and a thing that would never happen in Canada or the States or any other place where the government relationship with the legal system is more under scrutiny.
I wonder if you can pass me to someone else who can talk about the situation now and where things
might be
going.
Yes, I'll pass you on to Paul. Paul actually had a video camera on what was going on yesterday, and he has a very strong opinion about what's going on now.
Hello, I'm Paul.
Hi, Paul. Can you tell me a little bit about what you shot on Friday morning with your video camera?
Yeah, sure.
It's about a kilometre or so from our camp to the perimeter fence of the detention centre. There were, there were a group of radicals who expressed a fair bit of violence there yesterday, which the majority are ashamed about. There were some incidents where a policeman in full riot gear was dragged to the ground and rolled in the dust and abused, and none of us were happy about that. For the most part, this has been fairly peaceful. Very good shot I have of people breaking out of the detention centre, and then the ingenious methods they use to break the bars open and jumping into the crowd and from a height. It's all very interesting.
I wonder if you can tell us what's the situation now. Someone had mentioned earlier that there were actually roadblocks.
Yes. You need to envisage a landscape here, which is very, very desolate. Not a tree in sight, just some salt bush, very, very sparse vegetation, red soil, lots of rocks. And the road system is fairly good. It's nice sealed highways. And about a kilometre towards the town of Woomera, which is about a kilometre and a half, there is a roadblock. And, of course, they're searching vehicles, and they have arrested some people for trying to smuggle out some of the people who escaped from the detention centre, and the people that are assisting them are also being arrested. Only small numbers. We're not sure what will happen next. There's a meeting going on right at this moment to discuss the next move and what's likely to happen. The state police, their hearts are not in this movement. You can see it in their faces. They'd rather not be here. They seem almost embarrassed about being here. Security personnel outwardly behave a little different to that. I suspect that the group will try and symbolically at least go through trying to get these few detainees who escaped out of the place. It's unlikely that will succeed. That's about all I can say.
Is there anyone else there that wanted to comment?
Anybody here? Yes, sure there is. I'll put Ruth on for you. One moment.
Hello, Ruth speaking.
Hi, Ruth. Did you go to the fence yesterday?
Yes, I did.
Could you tell me what that experience was like for you?
Well, for me, I actually couldn't go beyond the fence because I found it very emotional just seeing the detainees on the roof of the detention centre, and they were waving, and there was obviously a lot of energy happening on that side of the fence, and I just broke down, was in tears with the emotional intensity of it all at that end, and it felt like I couldn't get any closer, really.
Could you just elaborate on what that emotion was about? I mean, you saw these detainees. What was going through your mind?
Well, I'm just so ashamed that our government can treat fellow human beings, they're my brothers and my sisters, and it just struck me as barbaric, as such a crime, and here were people, and I was feeling very connected with them, but it was just kind of a very intense experience. I did also go to the main gate yesterday and today. I've asked to go and see some people. I've been writing to some of the detainees in the centre, and have had a couple of responses from people inside, and I would really like to go and visit these people that I've made a connection with. And obviously, the centres, the police have decided that there are no visitors to or fro, and it's just blocked. But it's very, very unhelpful about when we could possibly see people or anything like that.
Ruth, I wonder if you can comment on the difference that these refugees are being treated, the way that they're being treated by the Australian government, and the way other refugees have been treated by the government of Australia.
I'm aware that because of the isolation here, these people perhaps are being singled out as a particular group that they want to isolate from the rest of the community. It's just the desert is such an intense experience here. Anyway, there's just no way out except by the road in and the road out. That we're very conscious that now the detainees are in our midst, that we will have a great deal of difficulty actually moving them from here. As far as the centre goes, the detention centre, I don't know. I think all that our detention centres are treating people in a pretty inhumane way.
What about yourself, Ruth? You're, I would guess, it could be called committing a criminal act by aiding and abetting escapees coming out of this detention center. What about this particular situation has brought you to that point of actually committing a crime?
Well, that's very interesting because I came here fully determined not to get arrested and not to do anything illegal, but when I saw the people, when the people were actually escaping from the centre yesterday, and I realised why all our group were running out of the centre, I saw some of the detainees in our group, and I just had to run and catch up with one of them, and I just held his hand as we ran out of the centre, and I just felt just such an incredibly compelling connection with the individuals as they are. And we didn't speak. This man and I just ran holding hands for some distance, and it was a most very powerful for me. And when during the night some of the detainees came through our particular part of the campsite, and we spoke with them and tried to offer any kind of support we could, they were just very clear they wanted a car to escape, which personally I think is a difficult option because the police are just on the roadblocks. But I'm just feeling at a loss about how we can keep these people safe, because when they go back in, they're going to be tortured. I don't doubt that they will actually be tortured.
Well, what are you calling for the international community to do?
Well, I would dearly love for there to be some process by which we could seek political asylum for these detainees. It seems absolutely ironic that they're seeking asylum from the asylum. And that there should be certainly a huge expose of what the Australian government is doing to people who come here in the absolute faith that they're coming to a safe and free country, and it's just not the case. Australians, a large group of Australians are sympathetic to them, but there's at the moment not enough political will to shift the government in the short term, but I see that as a growing movement. So the international pressure on the Australian government to have a look at its processes would be fantastic.
Ruth, I want to thank you so much for sharing your experience yesterday as you approached the fence there. Is there anyone else that wanted to speak?
Just a sec. Do we have anyone else? The rest of our particular group is in a meeting at the moment with the main group of the group, because there is no particular leadership. There's no one group here, and the meetings are a little bit laborious because there's a lot of different personal and political agendas going on, and they're trying to make sense of what's happened, because we've got reality right here. I think we were a bit shocked that the detainees actually escaped. We talked about it, but nobody was prepared for it when we actually fled from the detention centre. There was no contingency plan what to do with the people who had come out. So we've been left up in the air and quite fragmented in a way. But I think the will is there for us to try and do whatever we can for the detainees that have come out.
Well, Ruth, I think whatever success comes out of this effort, I really hope that it does restore the humanity that the detainees seemingly have been stripped of there in Australia.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for listening to us. And we know that there's a lot of love and compassion coming from all directions and all over the world for these people and for our aims to be one humanity. Thank you.